Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Wednesday. It is January 30th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
Oh, I was waiting to hear that. We haven't done a program together for a whole week, so good to have you back. And we have Wendy Wilson joining us today from Apothecary Herbs. So I am going to get started with the gold and silver market because we had a great day. We had a great day for gold. 620, up 620 in the New York spot price aftermarket at $1,318. And yes, 50 cents. $1,318.50 for gold, up 620. We had a high of 1324. Silver is up 21 cents. A big day for silver, $16.12, up 1.25%. Platinum was up $2 at 819, with palladium up 11 at 1363. USDS today was only weaker by 0.44 at 95.39. So crude oil was up 96 at 54.27. And of course, we'll talk about the Fed's decision to leave rates alone today. And, it just cracks me up. He comes out, Jerome Powell, it's nothing political. Well, they're just, it is just amazing what people believe. But anyway, the Dow was up 434 points. Did come back from its high. It was way over 500 points at one time. And I think it was 525. I saw at one point in time, could have been higher, a little bit lower, but 100 points higher than where we are right now, 25,014. The NASDAQ was up 154 points. It was up almost 2.25% at 7,183. And the S&P was up 41 at 2,681. So markets believe no rate increase is really going to help the consumer out there, and these multinational corporations can keep on buying and loaning cheap debt to buy back those shares. So that's what's going on, ladies and gentlemen. And let's look at the 10-year yield, 2.70%. That was down 0.02. And, that was pretty much it in the nutshell for the gold and silver markets today. We'll talk just a little bit about that a little bit more after the segment with Wendy Wilson. So let's get right to Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. And hello once again, Wendy.
Well, hello, Melanie. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Wendy. Good.
Yeah, it's a chilly day, but hey, we're going to warm things up with this topic that medicine says your life evolves around medications. Yeah, scientists actually at the University of Kent in the UK did some research. They were asking patients that were taking prescription medications, what their opinions of these drugs were. And depending on the age of the patient and the level of drug use they had, the satisfaction on the drugs was different. So the younger the patient, the less satisfied they were with their drug therapy, and the more information they wanted on the brand prescribed to them and all the expanded information on side effects. So patients are more skeptical about, medical treatments, and they have access now to a lot of information on health and medications than our previous generations, so they want more on the drug. So we're going to check this out, what their investigation has proven, and you're going to be surprised. In September 2018, a pharmacy professor by the name of Janet Kriska at the University of Kent, she and her cohorts did some research, and they found that patients that were taking long-term or lifelong drug therapy said the medicine was a burden. Have you heard this?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Well, patients are finally seeing, the drug treatment's really not a cure. They're expensive, puts them at risk with lots of side effects, and they're tired of their doctor telling them you have to live with your disease. So Professor Kriska also said that the patients taking many medications express the most displeasure regarding all the side effects, and with multiple drugs, you get more adverse events. Now, the older patients, she said, seemed to tolerate the drug treatments and complained less compared to the younger patients, like the millennials, even though the millennials are using fewer drugs, they just don't like drugs, apparently. They're very much not into their drugs. Well, according to their research at Kent, 25% of the patients they surveyed said they ask for more information from their doctor on their drugs they're being recommended to use. More than 25% wanted to know what brand the doctor was prescribing. And additionally, patients want to know what the financial cost is of the drug they're on. And over half wanted to know what the risks were when taking the drug and what the long-term adverse events are. So patients are starting to think, you know, if I'm on this for 10 or 15 years, what can I expect? Which is a good question.
It is.
Yeah. 11% were not satisfied with the drug's effectiveness, and 10 to 16% said the drugs interfered with how they lived. It affected their daily function. Can you think of any drugs that might do that offhand? Think of one?
Well, if one makes you go to the bathroom a lot.
Metformin.
Yeah. How about sedatives and stuff that you can't think straight?
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah. Well, so after the scientists digested all the views the patients gave them on their questions, they decided, hey, you know, we need to frame a new questionnaire regarding drug therapy. So their team came up with, well, at the it's called the Midway School of Pharmacy at Kent. They came up with a new questionnaire, which they called the Living with Medicines Questionnaire. And so this document actually, they say, will evolve. It will help with clinical guidelines for patients, and it will also increase anybody that has increased use of multiple drugs. It'll help them out, and also the health professionals, because one of the things they also stated was health professionals that are, you know, dispensing and prescribing these drugs to their patients, they don't take into consideration the impact drugs offer long term usually. So the questionnaire actually measures the drug burden. And it included eight areas, like what's your relationship with your physician, what difficulties do you have using the meds, what's the interference that the meds give you with your daily living, what is the lack of effectiveness, as well as your side effects, your cost, is there a lack of being, do you feel like you have a lack of being self-governed, autonomy, you have a lack of that, you feel like you don't have choices, and also any other general concerns. But this is all important, and here's why. A lot of prescription drugs older patients are taking do affect their cognitive function, increases the risk of ambulating properly and possibly falling. Then that increases their not only their risk of injury, but also complications and hospitalizations. Their sleep medicines, their antidepressants, their sedatives carry a huge burden risk, and we often don't think of it this way. Now, according to the National Library of Medicine Institute of Health, they say back in 2008, they started assigning a drug burden index to each drug. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. And they also have an accumulative risk score when you're taking the drug long-term or with other meds. So if you got exposure to lots of medications, this drug burden index is important. So patients are often not told they're taking drugs that are considered to be, quote, high-risk prescribing. I don't think a doctor's ever said that to anybody that I know.
No, I don't. I haven't heard.
Yeah. So the index is measuring your overall exposure to the med you're on, the implications on your dose and side effects, and also interactions with your other meds. It measures also your functioning profile, especially for older patients. And research looks for changes in your physical function. This index is only based on research done in a five-year period when the people were on these drugs. But here's what's important. The research team noted that the reduced functions that patients often get, their capacity to ambulate and function on a daily basis, comes in year six when they're on the drug. So they cut it off a year too soon. So that drug burden index is probably low because they didn't extend the research another year.
Long enough.
Right. So we're looking at a practice, though, within healthcare. They're attempting to control the risks of morbidity to high-risk multi-drug therapies. and the risk associated with taking a lot of medications will increase your adverse outcomes. So patients are supposed to take comfort now in this novel tool that pharmacists have and put together a ranking of their drug burden index on their medicines. Does it measure the total risk patients take while they're on the drug? Probably not, but it is better than what they had before, which was nothing. So imagine patients have been actually prescribed a lot of these drugs for decades with essentially no medication management plan. Think about that.
Well, that's true. I mean, there really isn't. They don't help. They don't work with you. I mean, in some cases, maybe they can't, but they don't work with you in order to help you get off the medication or to lessen the medications.
Right. Well, according to the research on your drug burden index, it measures the following risks associated with the patient: poor function and failure to function, falling, increase in frailty, increased risk of hospitalization, and mortality. So basically, in a nutshell, your drug burden index will encapsulate those five things, which is serious.
You know, we had Rob West on the program, it goes a couple months ago, and he talked about adverse drug reactions and how they're using DNA in order to help determine exactly the proper amount.
Yeah, they're tailored drugs now.
Tailored drugs.
Personalized. Yeah, mm-hmm. They're supposed to be able to tell you, what your tolerance levels are, to the drug. But you know, toxins is a toxin is a toxin. You know, you may not die as quickly if it's tailored, but you will be taking in a toxin. Let me read you the quote from the Expert Review of Clinical Pharmacy on, this is in 2008, on your drug burden index is what they reported. They said, the evidence for the association of increasing drug burden index with impaired function in older patients is strong in terms of the pharmacological mechanism. However, there are no published randomized controlled trials demonstrating the clinical efficacy and safety using the drug burden index as a clinical risk assessment tool. So they're not convinced this thing does enough, you know.
So what's a person to do? Because sometimes this medication is needed. I mean,
what can we take away? What revelations can we take away from this survey they did as medicine attempts to, you know, make up ground to improve their safety when patients are taking drugs? But the fact remains, all drugs are a risk. There are no zero risk therapies in modern medicine. And I heard that from surgeons and doctors. Mm-hmm. Patients need to really assess all their recommendations on their treatments. And if they can't live with the risk, well, then they should search for alternatives. The problem with the majority of people, Melanie, is many have searched alternatives, but the alternative therapies put the responsibility on the patient getting well, and it can be hard for some people to accept all that responsibility. Taking pills the doctor gives you requires almost no effort, no thought, and patients, you know, their part is limited. However, when you take your prescription drugs, you're still the patient assuming all the risk anyway.
Yeah, and you know what? On top of that, you have the misuse, the corruption, the wrongly diagnosis.
Right.
Our medical system is so overwhelmed that you have patients that are probably on medications they really don't even need.
Yeah, duplicates. Yeah, that's a problem too.
Yeah.
Where you know, somebody may be on two or more diuretics and they don't need to be, but. Well, let's say, Melanie, you do your homework. You're looking at an alternative. You're willing to go that route, and you're going to give it a try. And you say to yourself, well, these alternatives appear to be safer, but they require diligent effort on my part. How long is it going to take to produce positive results? And a lot of people ask those questions. And let me just try to give you a general guideline on that. The natural therapies, in order to produce positive results, working you in the right direction, it really depends on a couple of factors. How long you've been ill with your problem and the amount of damage or weakness that illness has sustained you. Also, has there been evasive treatments along the way? Have you had surgery or radiation, or have you been on a lot of drugs? Has there been a trauma to the body? Has the patient been on a lot of long-term drug therapy? that has probably disrupted metabolic systems like vascular, immune system, hormonal system, and nervous system? And also, is there any addictions in the mix? You know, a lot of people don't want to admit, you know, they have an addiction. They won't tell you. So to help rebalance your system, you don't want to use a lot of healthy nutrition. You want to detox, and you want to change your lifestyle. So, and you're using your medicinal herbs as well. It can take, on average, 3 to 4 months to start to see the things turn. Now, if events have been occurred that have weakened the body, like what we just talked about, you know, it could take a little longer. I've seen people, you know, get rid of some serious issues in 3 to 4 months, and then I've seen some people it takes them a year. So the good news is, here's the good news. The good news is a restoration does happen, and this is what our ancient ancestors called a cure. Marvel at that idea, will you?
They used to call it a what, Wendy?
A cure.
Oh, a cure.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right. Wow. Well, you know, everybody has that power, though, to make, you know, health decisions, and the ones we make will have lasting effects. So our creator actually showed us how we can live well, eat well, and be well. You want to stay, for instance, close to the Lord with sincere prayer, and he promises you to have a sound mind. So no need for antidepressants and sedatives. Think about that. And when we use medicinal herbs instead of toxic pharmaceuticals, we are promised a healing. In the scripture, it's there. It is never a good thing, though, when wounds don't heal. So think of that on a metabolic level, when drugs simply lessen symptoms and you never really heal. Right?
Yeah. I could give you example after example after example.
Right. Well, I trust God's herbs, and he said herbs are for the service of man, the healing of the nations. And that pretty much is a fact. It can't be undone. He spoke it. See? So if you want to know how you can live like you don't have to have your life evolve around medicines, and you want to escape that multi-drug burden risk, actually have the ability to be well, then, you know, I would say trust God. You know, change lifestyle. Changes have to be made, because obviously what you've been doing has made you sick. So evaluate the lifestyle, make changes, get some good nutrition going, of course, detox, and use your medicinal herbs. And I've never seen that option fail, to be honest.
Well, give us that contact information, Wendy.
Oh, sure. They can give us a call for a free product catalog at Apothecary Herbs, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. The website is thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com. And Melanie, coming next month, we're bringing back our herbal detective.
Aha!
Aha! It'll be fun.
I can't wait about that.
Sherlock Holmes herbs.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Wendy. Folks, give her a call. We'll be right back after this few short messages.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And, of course, sign up for a weekly newsletter. And we've got a lot of great prices going on here at Discount Gold and Silver, 90% silver. We got a couple of those bags left. You know, silver's gone up, what, 50 cents or more since I priced these at $500 or $325. That's a $325, yeah. It's $325 for a $25 face value bag. That's still available. We don't have many at that price, or they're going to have to be readjusted to the new silver price. So give us a call while we have them, 800-375-4188. And, you know, it just is amazing, you know, with Facebook. How do you jump 7% after earnings beat, after Facebook's gotten you know, beaten down? Maybe that's just why they've gotten beaten down to the, anyway, just kind of interesting. But today we saw gold rise, Dave, after the Federal Reserve kept benchmark interest rates unchanged and hinted at a slower pace of monetary policy tightening. And, of course, this was widely expected by investors. In a statement, the central bank voted unanimously to hold its policy rate in a range between 2.25 and 2.5%. The Fed added, in light of global economic and financial developments and muted inflation pressures, the committee will be patient as it determines what future adjustments to the target range for the federal funds rate may be appropriate to support those outcomes. So, underscoring investor interest in gold, holders of Spider Gold Trust, which is the largest gold-backed exchange-traded fund, rose 1%. And so gold was, it really was kind of flatlining heading into this report. And then we also had a better than expected ADP data that kind of put pressure on gold later on. But it's still hanging above that $1,300 level, and that was a big one to hold. And but the chairman said, Dave, he didn't change course on interest rates in response to President Trump. He says, what we care about is doing our job for the American people. When was the last time you ever heard a central bank doing their job for the benefit of the citizens of that country? Not lately. And, you know, so they are using their tools. They are manipulating the markets is what they're doing. They're manipulating the economy. And, hey, they have nothing to hide anymore. It's they'll come right out and say it. And
it's probably the biggest bubble of all the bubbles we talk about, you know, the housing bubble. And what have you, the biggest, I am now convinced, is the central bank bubble. Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of bubble. It's the bubble of the central bank members here and across the globe under a glass shield, if you will. Some might call it, you know, the upper echelons of Babylon. they're blinded by the reality and are unable to step back and see what you just said about, you know, the reality of their manipulation, the reality of their having transferred wealth from the poor and middle class to the another upper echelon of income earners. So think about that for a second, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, Powell goes on, Dave, and he talks about we're human. We make mistakes, but you never pay for your mistakes. It's the citizens of the country that pay for your mistakes. And it's just, he says, but we're not going to make mistakes of character or integrity. What's all this got to do with the Fed changes, the Fed rate, you know, increases or decreases? And they, you're right, it also shows exactly they are between a rock and a hard place. They took it to the point where it was beginning to really funnel into the economy. They got to stop. How low are they going to have to go? I mean, even Janet Yellen said, hey, we need to raise rates so, you know, if we go into a recession, we can lower them. How confident does that make you feel of your retirement accounts, of your money, that your paper money that you have in the stock markets? If you just listen to what these people say, it should scare you to death of holding that paper and not doing anything to protect it.
Well, he did say the case for raising rates has weakened somewhat.
Yes.
I would want to see a need for further rate increases.
Yeah. So, you know what? We're on the brink, ladies and gentlemen. We've got yet the, and this doesn't have anything to do with the government shutdown. There wasn't enough impact from the government shutdown to, you know, to really impact the economy. It's other things that are going on that are impacting the economy, ladies and gentlemen. And so, you know, we can go on. We had ADP, Dave, come out today, and they said that they added 213,000 jobs that grew in January. Faster than expected, even though, you know, the markets sort of did shrug off the government shutdown. 213,000 jobs. Economists had expected payrolls to grow by 178. Now, you know what? I'm sorry. If these economists, they get paid the big bucks. They get educated through the best schools. So, you know, if they're expecting payrolls to grow by 178 and all of a sudden ADP comes out and says 213, you know, who are these economists? They're really bad if they can't, you know, project or estimate or expect. How can they analyze these markets if they're so off? And I can't wait to see government's numbers. I'm fired up today, Dave.
There are people like you and me, Melody. People who, as you said, are well educated, largely well intentioned, but are people that I would love to sit down and play poker with, because I think it could be a good way to add some assets to my pockets to buy gold and silver. It's someone once told me that, you know, like politics, economics is as much as, if not more than, an art than a science. I think a large part of the problem is that we, not you and I or our listeners, but we collectively in general, people, citizenry, have economists up on a pedestal. They're among, you know, one of several classes of professions. And I think, you know, that our perception of them in a higher lot of intellect, you know, raises our expectations that their forecasts are going to be accurate as, you know, their technical skills, which in many cases are quite impressive. It just goes to show that forecasting, whether it's GDP, whether it's unemployment, whether it's budget deficits. It's not only an inexact science, it's almost a farce. And it's sad to say, because we do depend more than we should on these kinds of forecasts and projections. I don't know what we do about it, besides, I mean, not necessarily taking their numbers with a grain of salt, but just knowing how to think critically, you know, about things that we're being told.
What's sad, as you mentioned, you have so many people depend on what they're talking about. And yes, you know, we're taking out the manipulation and so forth. But when you look at the people who depend on them, it's their livelihoods. It's their standard of living that they have given over to these people who really don't have their best interests at heart, because they've got their own interests at heart. So, and when you have that type of, you know, when you're trying to do the best you can for yourself, how well can you do for other people? You know, it's to some degree, yeah, there at times you will. But when we live in the world that we live in, and there is so little truth that gets funneled down to the people, they just blindly hand their money policies or their money decisions to the financial planner, to the financial analyst, to the economists, hoping to make good decisions for them. It's just like Wendy was talking about, Dave. You go to the doctor and you think the doctor's going to give you medications to make everything better and without having to do anything, and your finances are kind of the same. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to play an active part and do what you think. If you think there's something wrong going on, it probably is. If you think there's a big farce going on and we got bubbles galore in the bond market where your retirement accounts, your pension accounts hold what, Dave, 30% of them or more? What, you know, I can't remember the number off the top of my head that all your retirement accounts hold in treasuries. Just think when they go belly up and they default, or they're revalued like President Trump said he could do during the campaign. So all of a sudden your great livelihood of retirement and your standard of living collapses. I mean, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you, don't think that it can't happen, because it's just a matter of time until it does. And that's the problem. We don't know when it is going to happen, Dave.
We'll talk a little bit about that, I believe, in the next segment. Got futurist and economic analyst who believes the global collapse is speeding up and will come sooner than later. Not a societal collapse, but an economic collapse. And he gives some...
But that economic collapse just might create the societal collapse to some degree. So,
indeed.
Yeah. So December home sales is the lowest in 5 years. House hunters signed 2.2% fewer contracts to buy existing homes in December. And this was according to the National Association of Realtors. The so-called pending sales are a future indicator of closings in 1 to 2 months. And the Realtors Pending Home Sales Index, that was down a dramatic, almost 10%, 9.8% compared to the previous December. So now you're looking at 12 straight months of annual declines. So I don't know, Dave, this was also the lowest December sales reading since 2013. You know, it used to be the auto industry that was an indicator of your economy. Now it's housing.
Yeah, I mean, we know the buyers have been struggling with high prices and higher rates for most of last year, and home sales declined as a result of that. The partial government shutdown, which ended last week after a record-long 35 days, wouldn't have figured much into those numbers anyway, as it didn't begin until toward the end of December. We'll probably know a little bit more about that impact on housing next month. but closed sales of existing homes, which represent contracts signed in October as well as November, were also sharply lower in December as the median home price hit a new high.
Well, you know, the U.S. economy's brief flirtation with 3% growth is over for now, cut short by the global outlook that is reversing. There's a lot of market tremors, sluggish business investment. GDP grew at a 2.6% annual rate in the fourth quarter. Economists estimate in a Wall Street Journal output will grow at 1.8% clip in the first quarter and a 2.5% rate in the second quarter, and this is according to the poll. And that would average out to about 2.3% growth for the nine-month period through this June. And, of course, that is slower than the 3% growth notched in the year through last September. So, you know, with the big slowdown in China's economy, slower growth in Europe, you know, is what's being blamed on as far as holding back the U.S. You have reducing demand for American exports, which are making companies more reluctant to begin any type of long-term projects. And, of course, I think the rate increase was a big impact on for these companies to make long-term projects because they didn't know how much they were going to have to pay on the debt that they go into. And something else, Dave, I heard that with the government opening, that infrastructure is going to be a big, big topic here coming up soon. So, you know, you can't go deeper in debt with those rates rising. So, you know, another reason for them to put a halt to the increased rates. But anyway.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, consumers, who we know drive more than two-thirds of the U.S. Economy, appeared to boost spending during the holidays, but at least in the retail industry, pulled back in recent weeks. A separate report this week from the Conference Board also showed consumer confidence fell in January for the third consecutive months. And, you know, meanwhile, the boost to American pocketbooks and paychecks is expected to fade later this year as the impetus from tax cuts wanes. Perhaps the biggest obstacle in China is China's cooling economy, which grew at the slowest pace in nearly three decades last year, due in part to the trade fight with the U.S. Melody.
And, you know, real quick here before we head into the break, we're talking about rate increases, and there was 44% of investors that were polled by E-Trade liked higher rates because of better return on their savings. And again, this is all part of it, ladies and gentlemen. People can't save when they're not getting paid any rates, and that's what it's all about. They're going to put that money in where they think they're going to get the most return, and that has been the stock market. And 37% said it was making borrowing money more expensive. So people were kind of hoping rates would continue to rise because it did help their savings. And with that, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back right after these few short messages.
On the line, I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And Dave, you wanted to add some comments on that, and then after that, maybe we can briefly talk about the global collapse before we go into the Brevity is golden today.
Hey, okay, sounds great. Well, before the break, we were talking about, you know, 44% of investors said a better return on my savings was the most important effect of rising interest rates, while 37% said it was making borrowing money more expensive. Well, the latter have it, Melody. In my mind, you know, in 2018, high-yield savings accounts outperformed the stock market, as you said, for the first time in a decade. Now, with an average annual percentage yield of 2.4% in these high-yield, so-called high-yield savings accounts, a $10,000 deposit earns $240 before taxes after 1 year. You know, meanwhile, investors would have actually lost money had they put that in stocks in the S&P, which ended last year in the red. More importantly, I believe, a $10,000 credit card balance paid in equal monthly increments over that same one-year period would cost $890 in non-deductible interest costs based on the average interest rate of 16.71%. In short, Melody, methinks far too many of those 44% are misinformed.
The government, Wall Street, the Fed, they're just manipulating and making people think that the only place to have the money is in the stock market. They don't want you to have savings. As Dave just pointed out here, it shows you would have lost. You don't hear anybody talking about what a bad year last year was already. Already now we're just talking about, oh, the stock market's up 400 points. Oh, the stock market's up 500 points. But where were you at the end of the year? And that was a great example, Dave, just to show how misinformed everyone is.
Indeed.
Briefly, let's go on and just talk about yesterday we had Greg Hunter on the program, and he did mention briefly Chris Martinson was his interview that he had. And Martinson told Greg Hunter, our prediction at peakprosperity.com is these collapse trends are accelerating and continuing, and none of them are reversing at this point in time. And he says that the long-awaited global collapse of many fronts has not only started, but it really is picking up steam. So, and again, this is going to affect people's future in a huge way, the standard of living, the lifestyles, you know, helping your children, your grandchildren. He says environmentally, we see these signs. He says, but we also have $245 trillion of debt in the global economy. And that debt has that debt cycle has been accelerating, and we have to keep that trend going, but we can't. So what we see are all these unsustainable trends converging, and they are going to happen, and people need to be ready. He lays out the case to blame central banks for much of the geopolitical and economic friction in the world today.
Yeah, I mean, he talks about central banking in terms of they don't create wealth, they redistribute it.
Wealth.
You know, when the Fed crams rates to zero, as you know, they did after the Great Recession, the savers lose out. But then he asks, but who do they lose to? Well, the winners and losers are being picked by the Fed and other central banks. And they've decided that the top 0.1% or even the top 0.01% should be the winners in this story and everybody else the losers. They've really benefited the elites, that is central bank policies, at the expense of virtually everyone else. This brings up the important point that Martinson says, central banks are not our friends. And he believes if we should get into a war, it'll be so devastating, there really won't be a recovery from it. Yikes.
No, and I mean, look at all the hot spots. Yeah, all we hear is the Taliban and Afghanistan are, you know, making deals, treaties.
Peacemakers.
Peacemakers. Okay. After how many thousands of years now they're making, oh, yeah, that's a good one. ISIS is gone.
Yeah. Say what?
That's, you know, that's not where the wars are going to be starting, ladies and gentlemen. And not to get biblical, but we know in Revelation, we know that Damascus has to be destroyed. And look what's going on. That's the focus. That's, you know, with Iran and Israel, and that's the hot spot of the world. And but I think another one is being created with Venezuela, but, you know, but it's the wrong part of the world, but it's still major. These things can pop up overnight. Dave, I was actually seeing, and I think we talked about seeing, and I think we talked about it on this program before, maybe I did with James Corbett, where they can now take with the internet and with all of these, you know, creative programs and so forth, they can actually have, and we've seen them in commercials where they take people that have passed away and they'll bring them to life and having them say things, you know, while they're doing commercials. They'll talk about doing that with a politician, you know, a leader, not a politician, but a president of a country, to where they could make him sit down and say and make us an announcement that we're going to war or something bizarre like that.
That brings Orson Welles to a whole new light. Gosh, the War of the Worlds. Can you imagine that? I can.
I do too. I mean, anything is possible in the world that we live today, and no one's going to help you but yourself, ladies and gentlemen. Martinson also said that he buys gold because it's the only form of money. Hello? Yeah. What have we been saying for 20-plus years? It's not someone else's liability. Mm. And we talk about a world that is just saddled with debt. How can you trust anybody? How can you trust any of these folks? They're all looking out for their own interest. I can't imagine why you wouldn't either. So, let's,
you know,
go ahead.
Let's
go ahead.
Talk about this PG&E thing. This has my a bug in my craw. Did you talk about it yesterday?
No, we didn't.
Well, I can see why.
Yes.
You want to start, or do you want me to?
Well, we all know, I guess they filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And they were being accused of being, I guess, part because of mismanagement and so forth, as being the ones that created or was responsible for the fires, or one fire in, or the most destructive fire in history in California. And of course, I guess, Dave, they ruled that it wasn't so. But yet they are still filing bankruptcy. So I'm not all sure what that was all about, whether they were going to use that as an excuse for them to file bankruptcy or what. But as part of its first day bankruptcy motion, the California utility that filed for bankruptcy early yesterday, they're looking to pay employees about $130 million in performance bonuses for last year. Is that what's getting your crawl?
You bet. You bet it is. And that figure doesn't include senior officers and directors. This is just, you know, it's not necessarily the rank and just the rank and file. It's you know, everybody that's eligible for them, which presumably would be middle management on up to just below the officers of the corporation.
So let's reward poor behavior.
$51.7 billion in debts.
Wow.
Spokesperson said the bonuses are critical to ensuring that employees stay motivated.
I guess a paycheck isn't enough.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this shouldn't be that my ire isn't directed toward the employees, particularly the rank and files, who I'm sure work hard, do their jobs, some of whom, you know, do them, you know, outstandingly and you know, normally would be, ought to be eligible for some extra pay. But in bankruptcy, Melody? I just don't get it. And that, you know, that's just the start of it. I mean, the company wants to maintain a program of gift cards that go to workers who go above and beyond their regular duties. That's $15.2 million.
Amazing.
And they also want to pay almost $750,000 in outstanding awards. Crazy stuff.
Well, what happens to their pensions?
Well, they're going to keep them. I mean, good for PG&E, I guess, in that respect. It wants to keep paying $327 million that it annually contributes to its pension plan. So that's a real good thing for employees who are now receiving pension benefits, you know, as well as those who are going to be eligible, you know, depending on how the company comes out of Chapter 11. It does strike me that, you know, they have a $5.5 billion loan, which was arranged by all of the too big to fail banks. And it doesn't set any deadlines for PG&E to sell assets or adopt, you know, a reorganization plan. And that gives the utility far more freedom than most companies have operating in Chapter 11.
So what are they covering up?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. They can't afford to let these guys fail. So the story is deeper than what we've so far have been told. And I'll tell you what, $327 million annually for a pension, that doesn't seem like a lot of money for a company that is, you know, $50 billion in debt. Mm. Does it? I mean,
no.
It really doesn't seem like a lot, as big as this company is supposed to be and so forth. And I wonder if this $327 million, how is that going to get shaved in the future? But real interesting, an interesting story that we're going to have to follow here. We got about 3 minutes left, so we're just going to go right into the brevity is golden. And we're going to, Dave, you're going to talk about something that we don't talk much about here, but it's really interesting, the costs of the Super Bowl advertising.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, it's amazing.
The 30-second ad for this year's Super Bowl will cost an estimated $5 million. Whoa. Last year, advertisers spent $408 million in, you know, in-game Super Bowl commercial airtime. And that was actually down $11 million from $419 million in 2017. And then the figures don't include production costs, which can be anywhere from $1 million to $5 million per ad. Many feature high-quality celebrity cameos, such as Pepsi's More Than OK spot this year, featuring Steve Carell and Cardi B and a couple of others. About a quarter of that spending, you know, was last year, was by automotive companies. The second biggest category, alcoholic beverages. the biggest spender overall since 1995, Anheuser-Busch InBev now, which owns brands such as Bud Light, which I believe are the funniest ads, Michelob Ultra, and Stella Artois. Some companies run Super Bowl ads virtually every year, with Anheuser-Busch outspending everyone else. Listen to this, Melody. Since 1995, it spent close to $600 million on Super Bowl ads. $600 million! Pepsi's next with about $350 million, followed by Fiat Chrysler at $250, Coke at $150, and General Motors just a little less. So why do advertisers pay so much? Because no live broadcast attracts as many eyeballs as the NFL's championship game. Ah, voila. Over the last 5 years, viewership for this extravaganza has averaged close to 110 million people worldwide. 2018 was by far the most viewed broadcast of the year. In fact, the second most viewed broadcast last year was the Super Bowl post-game show. And the top non-sports broadcast last year, newer show This Is Us, which aired immediately after. The audience is diverse, too. Nielsen says 47% of last year's viewers were female. Now, thanks to the internet, ads can be seen by more people than ever before. One Old Spice ad from the 2010 Super Bowl has been viewed over 50 million times on YouTube, and half of those views came after 2010. That helps TV networks charge advertisers more each year. Kantar Media estimates, as we said at the top of this segment, that the average price paid for 30 seconds of airtime is now going to be over $5 million. And that, Melody, is this week's Brevity is Golden.
Well, tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about Venezuela having 20 tons of gold looking for a destination. So, hey, if you want to, hey, give Maduro a call if you need to add some gold to your portfolio. But we're going to talk about him tomorrow. And the gold is real interesting with Russia and about palladium being ripped out of vehicles. So we got a lot of good stories tomorrow. We'll be back. Until then, be safe. Good night. And God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Nicholas, be the man.
In my dreams, I have a plan. If I